Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay in the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, I'm going to give you our call-in number, which is area code 646-716-4893. I'm going to repeat that one more time. Area code 646-716-4893. And, of course, you can always email during the time of the broadcast at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @AOL.com. Tonight we have a very special guest with us, but before I introduce her to everyone, I just wanted to make several different announcements. And the first one is that I'd like to let people know that our Houston weekend from last week was just phenomenal. There's really, if I had to pick one word to describe it, it's phenomenal. It was so wonderful getting together. We had 22 women come from all over the country and Canada who gathered together to share stories and experiences. And when you're going through this, you often feel as if you're the only woman in the world who understands what's, you know, who's going through the situation. And to find other women face to face, it's really, like I say, a wonderful experience. And as a result, a group of the Houston women will be meeting on a pretty regular basis. So if you do live in the Houston area and you would like to hook up with them, just let me know, and I'm more than happy to hook you up with them. Also, I'm starting now to plan our September Healing Weekend, which is my yearly one here in Philadelphia. That's the one where women come from all over to help me celebrate my birthday. That's my birthday weekend. And we always have a really wonderful time sharing and crying and laughing together. And then I have a little party for everybody as well. So I'll be announcing details in my newsletter and on my website starting next week. So if you have an interest in that, you'll let me know. And I'd love to have you come here to Philly and meet some other wonderful women just like you who are in the process of healing. And also I wanted to mentioned that our adult children of gay fathers group is really coming along beautifully. In fact, this week we have our support chat for, you know, kids from these marriages who have issues that they don't want to discuss with their parents. So we do it as a group on online support chat, and also now we've established a Yahoo, you know, posting board. So if you have kids who are 18 and older as adults who want to deal with a lot of the different issues and really feel that they can't talk to their mother about it, you know, they can't talk to their father about it, but it definitely has affected them in a number of ways. And when we're talking a little bit about the children and how it's affected them, because we all know that, you know, any kind of bad marriage affects your children. But when I talk to the kids who are part of this group, you know, they say that some of the issues that affect them as far as establishing trust in their own relationships or future relationships with partners due to ongoing secrets and lies while they were growing up, self-esteem issues because many of them were the keepers of the secret, living with the guilt and blame, questioning of their own sexuality, coming from a gay parent and whether or not this has been passed down to them, anxiety issues due to family problems between the parents that were based on daily deceptions, sometimes abandonment issues because many times as we know the gay parent will enter their new world and forget their old one. Also, the acceptance of their parents' new lifestyle and partners. I mean, this is really an issue for many of our kids who may be very pro-gay, but when it happens to their father and they have to watch them with partners, sometimes that's difficult. And questioning how many family problems that impacted their thinking was due to, the lies and the secrets that were going on, was it really based on reality? So these are a lot of the issues that we don't think about for our kids, but they're pressing on their minds, and the fact that they can have others to relate to with this. I do supervise this particular group, but the Yahoo group, the posting group, is a private group, so they can, anyone who joins it, you can just talk among yourselves there. So I strongly encourage you, if you have children, to you know, please talk to them about joining this, and if they're interested, please write to me. And that's about my announcements for the night. I just do want to really talk about in the future weeks when I get on the show. I think that there are so many times when we're looking for little things to make us have different outlooks and build and grow. And I know that, for instance, for our support group online, we have a Facebook room, and we also have one for our Houston group now and the Philadelphia group. And people are always posting positive, you know, kinds of affirmations, which are really important. But I'm a music lover, and I really want to post some really great music. So starting next week, I'm going to have a theme song each week that will be uplifting and really relate to you as a straight spouse. So if you have any musical suggestions, please let me know. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my very special guest tonight, Marianne Glynn. Marianne, how are you?
Fine, thanks, Bonnie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being our guest. And I mysteriously discovered you a couple months ago. I was so thrilled. You know, I thought, wow, where's this woman been? I just found her. And you've certainly been around for a while just because I discovered you recently, but better late than never, I always say. And Marianne is a licensed clinical social worker who does therapy and has a practice in North Jersey. She also runs groups for straight spouses now. Well, not for just straight spouses, right?
Well, for people in destructive relationships of all types.
That's our women.
Yep.
So, so Marianne is now running groups, you know, and we'll talk about that in a little while, too. But I do want to mention how I found you, because I'm affiliated with the organization Love Fraud, and Donna's been a guest on our show.
Huh.
And I really find her very awesome. I mean, here's a woman who's a woman after our own hearts, who's a really excellent teacher as far as teaching us what to look for in relationships and how many sociopaths are out there.
Mm-hmm.
So being part of that network, you know, when I receive her newsletters, of course, I'm always looking for good information. And sure enough, there was your information, and I was just like wowed over by what you had to say as far as understanding the process of healing and things that people can do for healing. And that's when I called you and contacted you and asked you if you'd be willing to not only be part of the show, but be part of this network of women healing, which you were very, very wonderful in agreeing to do that, you know, as far as, you know, and we already have someone who's now going to your group, so I'm really excited about that.
I'm delighted. I'm so happy to hear you talk about the Houston weekend.
It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the most important thing to healing is really support. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever heard of Dr. Dan Siegel.
No, I'm not familiar with him.
He's a researcher, a psychiatrist on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been running workshops and teaching and writing books his whole life. And recently, I've been taking an online seminar with him, and recently they've proven that the brain doesn't really heal from damage or trauma. Someone can't heal alone. Nobody heals alone. You have to heal in the context of other people, because in truly healing the brain, it has to develop things called mirror neurons. I don't want to go into the science of it, but it has to do with social connection, and that's what actually heals the brain from damage and trauma. Isn't that interesting?
I think it really is. And really, this is your specialty. So maybe you can talk a little bit about the work that you do as far as working with people who are victims of post-traumatic stress.
Okay. Do you understand what post-traumatic stress is? Want me to go through that a little bit?
I would like for you to go through that with our listeners, because I think many of them are suffering from it.
Yeah. Well, if you're in a relationship that has deception, you know, in this case, there's always deception if a woman is married to a gay man. He may be carrying out a double life, but even if he isn't exactly doing that, he has created a false self, which is similar to what a narcissistic personality disorder does, or a sociopath. So you're basically in a relationship with a shell of a person. Their real self, their vulnerable self, their feeling self is tightly locked away. So you might think the other person is engaged in the relationship because you are and they're there, so they must be committed too, right? But he really isn't. So inherent is that you feel they're distancing from you, that you blame yourself for their lack of desire for you, for their impatience, their meanness, for instance, their inability to listen to. So in that kind of relationship, you're already going to be feeling a lot of anxiety and or panic. You might become paranoid. You can't put your finger on what's wrong. And all of this can be very debilitating as the stress hormones are being released all the time. But when the deception comes to light, you know, when you find that the person comes out, you find they've been cheating on you or whatever, the betrayal is, of course, devastating and humiliating, and then you have actual post-traumatic stress disorder. And what that is it has a number of symptoms, intrusive thoughts, nightmares, flashbacks, feeling unsafe, feeling like bad things are going to keep happening, being distrustful of people and relationships, the sleeping and appetite can be disturbed. You have an increased startle response, you know, like someone walks into the room and you jump, and hypervigilance, which means that you're always kind of on edge, waiting, being prepared for the next bad thing. And trauma is processed in a completely different way than anything else. It gets kind of, the brain gets assaulted by the shock of what has just happened, and it gets stored in places in the brain that are not recalled in the normal way. And what happens is that the memories get triggered by something sensory, you know, something that reminds you, you know, like even a smell. And suddenly you don't actually remember the event. You're in a complete flashback of it.
How about like a loud noise, like somebody yelling? Not even at you. But if you suffered with, you know, a rageaholic your whole marriage or relationship, and then somebody else, totally unrelated, starts yelling. I mean, do you think that's one of the triggers?
Yeah, that certainly could be a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
You could go into a flashback from something like that. Sure.
Okay.
Or just hearing from the person afterwards. You know, if you've left them, or if they've been abusive, and you get a text from them, you're likely to go into a complete like meltdown flashback, and it's going to bother you probably for an whole day or for days after that.
And a lot of times these guys just don't give up. Is that true?
Very true. Very true.
You know, it's a matter that they just don't want to let you go. They want to just sit there and make your life miserable for years to come.
Yeah. When they're with you, they don't want you. And then
but they don't want anybody else to
want you,
right?
They don't
want to
let you go, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, they can stalk, of course. They can just not let go. They can just keep wanting to be in your life. Of course, the best thing is to not have any contact. And that's really hard for people, but
contact
is the best rule. If you
can, I know that my women have a very difficult time with setting boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And I can definitely understand that because I'm the worst example of setting boundaries. I always tell women, don't follow my footsteps, you know, I'm horrible. But, you know, I try now, but it took me so many years to learn. But I think as women, you know, we're just socialized to be nurturers and caretakers, and we always want to believe in our love for the men that we fall in love with, no matter how, you know, ridiculous it is.
Yeah.
And we have this, you know, little glimmer of hope that somewhere along the line that they're going to change. I think that women have this eternal hope of men changing.
Yeah.
So what do you tell them when they tell you that?
Well, I try to identify what in them makes them believe that they can change a man. have you ever heard of magical thinking?
Uh-huh.
Okay, a magical thinking is something that kids do. Okay? You know, it's like when a child is not getting their needs met. They have a fantasy that they can get their parents to meet their need if they'll just be, you know, more helpful, more good, more achieving, less trouble, more caretaking of their parents' needs, not having any needs, you know, and they have this fantasy that if they do these things, they'll get nurturing from their parents or the love that they're not getting.
Right.
And the alternative to this would be devastating to the child, you know, for a child to think that their parents are just incapable of loving them because their emotional and physical survival depend on it. That would be unthinkable. So while that helps children to survive childhood, it doesn't work very well in adult relationships, but we do transfer that kind of thinking into our adult relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Women especially, we tend to create a similar fantasy around our partner of what we need him to be in order to meet our own need for nurturing. But the problem is, based on our earlier experiences in our families, of where we learned about intimate relationships, we often will pick someone who's not capable of loving. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Is it because we think we can change them or fix them?
Yeah. We think, well, if we just try harder, just like a child, if we just try harder, if we're, you know, more accommodating, if we're more loving, they'll come around.
How about women who are attracted to what I call the bad boys? You know, there's something exciting about finding a bad boy, even though you know he's bad. Do women really believe that if they love them enough, they're not going to be that bad?
Yeah, I think that women believe, I blame Disney a lot, too. You know, we grow up with these, you know, think about the movie Aladdin, for instance.
Uh-huh.
Those types of the diamond in the rough, or the bad, you know, the bad guy. There were old movies, quite a few old movies like that, where, you know, the love of a woman turns the man around. All he needed was the good love of a woman, of a good
uh-huh.
woman, right? And
exactly.
So those are just really bad societal messages that we get growing up. But I think we also kind of learn that in our families. You know, because women are caretakers, and most of our mothers were caretakers, and it's kind of what we think that will get us love. If we take care of a person's needs, then they'll love us. But it doesn't happen, of course.
And I think this happens more with, you know, people who come from more dysfunctional families.
Yeah.
Because of the
yeah.
fact that, you know, I've found in, you know, the women that I work with, the more broken the family, of course, the more broken the woman, the more you're apt to find a broken relationship because, you know, you're just happy somebody's taking you away from one insanity and now putting you in another one. But
right.
sometimes second insanity looks better than the first one.
Yeah, right.
Because we're blind
to
what
it is. Well, we gravitate toward what's familiar.
Uh-huh.
And we're not necessarily conscious of that, but that's what we do.
No,
we gravitate toward what we think love, what our early experiences of love are. And if our early experiences of love were not very loving, we'll gravitate in an adult relationship towards someone who's really not very loving either.
And that's what I tell my women, that, you know, they have to be role models. I don't know if you agree with this, but
mm-hmm.
that children model themselves after us. So if children see that you're willing to stay in a relationship that's not fulfilling, where you're crying and miserable, where someone's not treating you correctly, then that's going to become their norm. And it's what I personally call,
mm-hmm.
I title this, the monkey see, monkey do, monkey act just like you syndrome. You know, well, that's the way I like to kind of phrase
yeah.
it. Yeah, and it's a matter that to me, you're going to follow whatever you see in your household because that is your norm.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know that it's not. You think that this is the way life is supposed to be. And
yeah.
I find that when you see a woman get beat up, it's not unlikely that you're going to find a man to do the same thing to you and you'll accept that behavior because you don't know differently. Now, do you
Absolutely.
Agree with that or no?
I do.
Okay.
Yep.
So you said that you yourself also had some experience with this, right?
Yes. Yes. Initially I was in a relationship. I was married to a man for 20 years, and that was a very good relationship. even though we both came from dysfunctional homes, we had traumas and, you know, things happen to us. It's just kind of luck. I don't know how else to explain it. He happened to be a very good person, a person who was able to be in touch with his emotions, take responsibility for things. In other words, it was healthy enough. You know, in a healthy relationship, when you have a conflict, you might fight about it, you know, but eventually you take a look at it, you'll take a look at yourself, you'll both take some responsibility for your part in it, maybe be able to identify or share what was under it, you know, an insecurity or a fear or something like that, and then you connect through it, right? That's a healthy relationship. And that's what I had with my first husband, and it was a very, you know, we went to therapy, we did a lot of enrichment type things, and it was a good marriage. Okay, then there was like quite a few years where I didn't date, I dated a little bit, none of them worked out very well. And then I'm starting to get a little older, and I ended up meeting somebody who seemed like a great person in a lot of ways. He was a good father. He was divorced, but he seemed to be a good father. He was kind of a conventional guy, had a good job. You know, it seemed okay, but there were some things that were happening with me that I wasn't aware of at the time, and I think a lot of it had to do with the trauma of losing the first husband.
Mm-hmm.
So like kind of being not really trusting love. My faith in love kind of was damaged, but I wasn't really, you know, aware of it. And so I ended up getting involved with this guy, eventually marrying him. And turned out, I found out maybe a few months after I actually moved in with him, after we'd been dating a few years, that he had been with other women from the beginning.
Wow.
Yeah, from the very beginning. This was going on for years. And there were a lot of, I don't want to go into it here on the radio, but there were quite a few other things going on that it blew me away when I found out. I was just blown away. But the weird,
were there any red flags?
Yeah, lots of them. But I didn't recognize them because I guess at that time I was just naive. Like a lot of women, you know, you just don't think. You think that when somebody says something to you that they're telling you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You think they mean what they say, but almost nothing about that relationship was true.
Mm-hmm.
Even the getting married part turned out to be kind of a manipulation. You know, everything about it was false. And it was, you know, just an incredible blow to find that out, that, you know, the person that you love or is supposed to love you is really hurting you in the way that no one's ever hurt you before. And then I tried to make, there was a time, you know, I left almost right away because there was no remorse, no admission. And then he kind of came after me like a, just would leave me alone, you know, and just figure out what it was that he needed to do for me to trust him again, lied about the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
I ended up going back for a while, and within a few months I found out he was doing the same things all along. So that was the end of it. But in some ways I'm very grateful for that experience because I went through it with my eyes open in a sense.
Uh-huh.
And I was very aware of how uncomfortable I was the whole time, even before I knew what was going on, and how damaging it was, and how I started to get kind of, I lost myself and got destroyed in the process. And if I didn't live through it, I almost wouldn't believe somebody could be so deceptive.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really kind of a interesting.
It was a good learning
experience. Really good learning.
Yeah. I always say whenever you can take these negatives and turn them into something positive.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, that's always a big plus. You know, that's how we got started in this whole, you know, straight gay movement was that I took my marriage at that point 30 years ago and tried to turn it into something positive to help other women.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I could probably say the same for your situation up until the really the computer, there was very little information available on any of these situations. Certainly not with the straight gay marriages and also the narcissistic men and sociopaths.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have such an easier time today finding good information to try to explain what the problems are.
Yes, and it's epidemic at this point. It seems
to be. Let me ask you this question. Is it nature or nurture? When you find these men who are broken men like this, who are narcissists, sociopaths.
Well, you know, nobody knows, really. Nobody absolutely knows. It might be some of both. You know, it might be some, I mean, that doesn't explain much, does it? But
no, it does.
But, you know, when there might be something in the brain that just doesn't quite connect socially that might make it easier for some people to do things to other people without a conscience. But I think that some people, and this is just my theory, I think that some people, because of whatever they've been through, a lot of their own abuse, you know, maybe gay men who have been bullied or not accepted by their own families or their own society, you know, that kind of thing. Whatever it is that causes someone at some point to shut themselves down,
mm-hmm.
I think that's done on purpose. I think people shut something down, create a false self, and then they won't go to their pain anymore. You know, they won't go to, they're not, it's really the pain. They shut themselves down so they don't have to ever feel the pain anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then they become this person who is very defended and has very thick walls around who they really are. But they won't ever access that. And their mission, you know, their mission is to never go back there. So they have to make sure that that's never threatened.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're married to that person, you're automatically a threat to those defenses. And then they have to keep kind of pushing you away.
Mm-hmm.
And in that process, you get hurt a lot.
Yeah,
I think that people shut down purposely as well.
Listener just wrote a note to you and was wondering
mm-hmm.
if you could answer this.
It
says, question for Ms. Glynn. I've always felt, especially lately, having the trauma of divorce behind me for a few years, that I was suffering from PTSD and am relieved to have this possibility confirmed by a professional, even though I have not been through violence, meaning you. So what
mm-hmm.
is the best path for recovery now that the major trauma is behind me, but the residual effects still haunt me from time to time, anxious and weary about having more mountains to climb and not being strong enough next time and having trust issues? And this is from my friend Wendy.
Hi, Wendy. Well, the person that you need to have a relationship with now, Wendy, is yourself. You have to work on the things that allowed you to be or stay with this person, like, you know, being alone, you know, whatever, you know, the fear of being alone, self-esteem, and you have to heal from the damage, of course. There's a lot of different ways to heal from trauma that a therapist can help you with who specializes in trauma, because a lot of therapists don't know what that is. One of the major things is just being mindful. That sounds simple, but it's very powerful. By being mindful, it means to do some things every day that let you be inside your body. Some people do yoga or meditation. Some people do, there's something called a walking meditation, which is Zen walking meditation. Something that helps you to just kind of be inside of your body and be still. That's just one example of things that help. There's a lot of different things, though, that help trauma, that groups, different types of healers, massage, body work, and doing things.
I'm just wondering,
to
for
nurture
some women,
yourself,
I think that would be you think that would be difficult for some women who have been touched inappropriately over the years?
It might.
Mm-hmm.
It would depend on their comfort level with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
How about something like yoga, Tai Chi?
Yes.
Like relaxation exercises like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yoga has been shown to actually help release emotion from the body.
Mm-hmm.
Martial arts is a great release.
Mm-hmm.
Or any kind of exercise at all. And all of these things done with a sense of mindfulness. In other words, to be in touch with the anxiety that you feel as a result, like what Wendy was talking about, the anxiety that you feel at a particular time, or the hurt, or the humiliation, or whatever, you know, whatever it is that you happen to be going through that's residual from that, that relationship. While you're doing these things, like yoga, for instance, you are mindful of the feeling and kind of feel where the feeling is in your body and release it.
And I think that's what you mean by getting in touch with your own body.
Right.
That,
your emotions,
you know,
are in the body. The trauma is stored in the body.
Uh-huh.
And when you're mindful, if you are in your body, do things that put you inside your body or make you aware of your body, you're going to heal little by little.
Marianne, I know that sometimes I give this advice and people don't want to really listen to it, and I can understand
mm-hmm.
why.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do believe that coming out of these relationships or marriages, that you really have to give yourself a year to heal, at least. As far as understanding, you know, what went wrong, why you stayed so long. You know, because I really do believe in almost all cases, you know, women who go into marriages like the ones we have are what I call broken women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they came from either family dysfunction, coming out of a bad marriage, low self-esteem,
mm-hmm.
variety
mm-hmm.
of reasons, and that if those issues aren't addressed in a really meaningful way,
mm-hmm.
that I tell our women that you're going to go right back out there and find a different kind of predator. It doesn't mean it's going to be another gay husband.
Right.
There are all kinds of men out there who have really, you know, destructive behavior, and they're looking for vulnerable women, and they know how to find us. Do you agree
Absolutely.
With that?
Absolutely. They have radar.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that unless you do exactly what you just said, Bonnie, take a year off and really let yourself heal, there's
mm-hmm.
probably a 99% chance that you'll transfer onto the same type of person next time. And
yeah, could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, because, you know, number one, I think you might even be in a worse place, because not only do you still have the damage from that relationship and the self-esteem issues that you had that brought you into it anyway, but now you have the kind of trust issues coming out of this that is going to make you even more guarded about putting your heart out there, and you're likely to choose someone who is really unable to connect with, and you do this all subconsciously. In a weird way, you're likely to gravitate toward a person who can't connect on an intimate level so that it won't hurt so much next time your heart gets trampled.
And I think another
issue,
yeah, I think it's an excellent point that you're making,
mm-hmm.
and I think another issue is that when you go into these relationships, I always say that men are on their best behavior.
Well, yeah.
You know, I don't think that any women I know would marry a man who was physically abusive. Like when they date you on your first date or two, they're not smacking you in the face.
No.
You know, that develops over time. So
mm-hmm.
you don't really know a man for a while. And I say that it's fine to go out and practice, have some sex if that's what you need. Not
yeah.
a problem. But you can't
mm-hmm.
put yourself in a position to meet another wrong man when, you know, you haven't healed from the first wrong man. But then I'll tell you what some women say, so I'd like your advice on how to respond to this. I'll have women who come to me and I'll say, well, it's really important that you move on. This is really a destructive relationship. And they argue back with, I've already had a bad marriage or two bad marriages. You know, I don't want to have to feel like I'm a loser again. How
mm-hmm.
do you respond to that?
Why would they feel like a loser?
Because they've already had a bad marriage or two.
In other words, they should,
you know, they
go
feel
ahead,
that it was,
on.
Yeah, they feel like it was
someone.
Their failures in some way. Or how are people
oh.
going to look at it? Or, you know, people won't understand, why am I going again?
Mm-hmm.
you know, getting out of another marriage. You know, I think I feel the stigma about marriage, like if it fails, then it's your failure. And I say, it's not your failure. You just failed to meet the right person, but you can't personalize that.
Right. You may have failed to meet the right, yeah, you mean you someone who preyed on you, who was deceived you? Yeah, that's not your fault. I mean, there are things that we, you know, that make us more vulnerable to a person like that, like you were saying. And, of course, you know, that's going to put, but if you met a good person, those vulnerabilities aren't necessarily going to turn into that into an abusive relationship or a bad relationship. It might help heal you if that's a good person, you know. So, you know, those things don't automatically mean that you're going to be in a bad relationship. But if you're with a narcissist, sociopath, or you're married to a gay man, yes, that is going to be a bad relationship no matter what. I'm sorry, but you were saying that
I'm saying it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that it's your failure. I mean, I can't.
Oh,
so
okay.
Many women are so afraid to give up or to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel bad because they really need to.
Okay, Bonnie, I'm sorry. I didn't get what you were saying.
No, that's okay. I'm saying so many women should get out of relationships that stay there and they linger.
Oh,
you know,
when
they really
afraid
need
of...
to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't want to be viewed as a failure because they've already had a past relationship that was a failure, and now they're going to have another one. And I said, you know, it doesn't matter how many failures you have to have the success of getting out of them.
That's right. And if you learn from this one, there's a good chance that the next one will be better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I think that we can stop making the same mistakes over and over if we see ourselves making them and really want to change them.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's the key, and that people can change it, right?
Yep. If the desire is there to change, you can change. Anyone who wants to change can change if you're really motivated. Yep. If you're ready to face whatever it is inside that is damaged or what brought you there in the first place.
As a woman
and also,
I was going to ask, as a woman and as a therapist, what would you suggest to women as far as what qualities to look for in a man?
The main quality to look for is what happens when there is a conflict, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're together long enough to start having some disagreements or fights, and if you don't have any, that's a red flag, okay? You never have a fight. Something is wrong. See how it goes. See what happens. Is the other person able to take responsibility? Are they able to hear what you're saying and validate what you're saying? Are they able to empathize? Those things will tell you if this person is able to be emotionally connected and honest. And if you don't have that, I don't care what kind of a job he has. I don't care how good looking he is. I don't care how smart he is. None of those things define a good relationship.
So, in moving forward, do you think that, you know, you've seen many women who are able to heal and move on?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think, and because we are women, we tend to be more able to do that for some reason. We're able to do the emotional work.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I think that's a good point you brought up. Women are probably able to do emotional work better than men because they are emotional.
Yep.
Whereas men lack that same kind of, you know, sensitivity as far, I mean, not all men, but most men.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
They just don't have that kind of sensitivity. What about couples where there's infidelity? What do you suggest?
What type of infidelity?
Well, for instance, where... Let's say a man is going out. I have women who have husbands who are, I look at them as maybe sex addicts more so than just gay.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like a double whammy. They're having sex with somebody all the time or they're consumed with sex, multiple partners. I have a lot of women who go through a lot of heartache because in trying to save their marriage and not understanding exactly what's wrong in it, because a lot of these men aren't honest for a long time,
uh-huh.
that you know, or ever, for that matter, over, I would say close to 60% of men will never tell their wives the truth about their homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But I think women try to make all kinds of compromises to make the man feel that, you know, she loves him enough to do things that she's not comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that it's really important that sexually you need to feel okay and comfortable with someone and not have to do something to make them happy.
Absolutely.
How do you feel about that?
I absolutely agree. If you're doing something that feels uncomfortable or that you wouldn't normally do, but you try to talk yourself into it just to please him, then you shouldn't do that. Then he's not being sensitive to whatever it is that makes you comfortable. You know, if it has something has to be agreeable to both partners to be okay sexually, but really agreeable. You have to be honest. If you really are uncomfortable, you shouldn't do it.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And let's say you find out your husband is cheating on you. Let's say with a man or a woman. I mean, to me, infidelity hurts no matter who it's with.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some women are able to, well, in a gay situation, it's never going to change. It's always going to be there.
Yeah, that's never.
Because you can never satisfy a gay man when you're a straight
right.
woman. I mean, that's just the reality.
Yep.
But let's say I have women who get into their next relationships, and, you know, it's not with somebody gay, but it's with someone who's cheating on them with another woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there a way to forgive this or overlook it? Because I have to be honest with you, I'm not one who can do it.
Well,
maybe there's some secret you can
there's
share.
There's different kinds of cheating. there's an affair that, you know, sometimes a marriage will go for a long time and everything will be fine, and then someone will be tempted into an affair because
mm-hmm.
probably the marriage is in a bad state or a kind of blasé routine state or maybe a person is having their own personal crisis of some sort or depression, and they get lured into the flattery of somebody's attention for them, and over time they develop an affair and perhaps get caught, and this will create a crisis in the marriage. And if it's going to work out, the person will be very remorseful, realize that they were deluding themselves and hurt their spouse, and will do everything in their power to heal that relationship. And if the other spouse, the cheated on spouse, needs that person to call them every half hour to check in with them so that they can start to feel more comfortable again, they'll do it. They'll do anything. They'll go to therapy. They'll be honest. That's the rare case, okay? But what you're talking about is someone who just, like a serial cheater.
Right.
Or a gay man in a straight marriage, you know, someone who's...
Well, that's a doomed situation. I mean, there's just
right.
no way that women can ever win their husbands or, you know, as hard as they may try. And these women go through everything from gastric bypasses to plastic uh-huh. surgery to enlarging their breasts to taking down their breasts. I mean, they go through
mm-hmm.
everything just to make their husbands try to love them, and their husbands are gay.
Yeah,
so they're really
yeah.
wasting their time. I mean, you know,
right.
it's not going to be happening. So
mm-hmm.
it's more like with, you know, if you're with a man who's straight, you know, because like I say, for future relationships with women,
mm-hmm.
you know, I just, you know, if you think you're doing everything right in a marriage and your husband just meets somebody and he's more interested in her sexually,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it happens every day, right?
Right, right. I'm with you. If someone is, unless there's some kind of, you know, like what I just described, which happens sometimes, you know, but if someone is just cheating because they want more excitement, they're likely
mm-hmm.
to be a serial cheater, and you should run fast.
Because these guys don't change, you know, once they start
cheating on
you.
They don't change. They don't have
they
a
are.
Conscience. These guys
mm-hmm.
don't have a conscience, or they wouldn't be doing it. And if
mm-hmm.
you don't have a conscience by the time you're adult, you're not going to have one, ever.
So what do you think puts the greatest strain on a relationship?
Oh, well, just in general?
Mm-hmm.
Just life, you know, children, financial stress, you know, those things always, you know, people always talk about at the beginning of before kids came along or before some of the stressors came into their life and it was just them, the relationship seemed to have a better flow. And then these other things come in and it changes everything. You have to adjust your relationship and it's hard to kind of maintain your relationship as a priority when a lot of other things come in your life. And then people inevitably are growing apart, can inevitably grow apart. And then the biggest problem is not communicating. That's what the biggest problem in marriage is, basically, aside from the other things. Yeah. Not knowing how to communicate in a way that makes you have emotional intimacy again.
I think that's really important. But there has to be a willingness on, you know, the man's part too. It can't just be the woman trying all the time, wouldn't you say?
No, it has to be. Communication is two people, you know, both listening, both sharing honestly. You know, one person can't hold an intimate relationship together.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
You have to have
yeah.
somebody working with you on this. You can't.
Yes.
And I think that's
right.
why marriage counselors, you know, it's funny, when my marriage was first breaking up and I knew nothing about counseling, and, you know, I wanted to go to a marriage counselor, not when it was first breaking up, but when I first found out about the gay issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to go to a marriage counselor. Of course, this is 30-some years ago, and my ex-husband said to me, well, I don't need counseling. I'm happy in the marriage. You're the one who's not happy. So,
No.
I hear that a lot. But I called a marriage counselor, and, of course, the marriage counselor said, well, unless you both come in, I can't work with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so taken aback. I said, well, I still want help with this marriage. And she said, well, marriage counselors don't work with one party. And, of course, then I didn't understand it, but, you know, after I went to school, I understood it,
mm-hmm.
that unless you have two people who are fighting together towards the same goal, you know, it's not going to work.
That's
you know,
right.
there has to be that willingness on the other person's part as well.
Right. A good marriage takes two people who are willing to be honest
mm-hmm.
and communicate. Yeah, and work on the marriage. Yep.
So those
yep.
are things.
I mean, one person can, you know, I can work with one half of the couple for a while, but
mm-hmm.
most of the time when that happens, they come to see that the other person, you know, they might try some different things, and if nothing works, they will end up seeing that the marriage, they've done everything they can, nothing's working. Everything they
And I agree, and I tell women that another really important factor is you being able to communicate, because I think that many of us, including me, we were not only shut down in our marriages, we were shut up. So that we were told that, you know, we didn't want to say anything because it would create, you know, anger or, you know, insults. So you learn how to keep quiet.
Right.
And
you learn,
then
that,
when
that's
it
how control
yeah,
happens.
That's
yeah.
how they shut you down, or I call it
yeah.
shut you up. Shut you down and shut you up. But yeah. when you get into a healthy relationship, if you can't express yourself, it's almost like you have no chance either, because you have to be able to communicate with your partner. And I always, you know, I used to say to my boyfriend when I first met him, and we're together almost 20 years now, but I said to him, like, I was thinking, well, can't you understand what I'm thinking? Like, I would get mad, and he would say, I know you're mad now. What is it? And I would say, can't you tell? And then I'd make him guess, like, 300 things that it could be, trying
mm-hmm.
to catch him on something else. You know,
uh-huh.
I was still playing that game of not being honest, truthful, and communicating because I was so used to being afraid that that he wouldn't love me anymore. And that's
yeah.
why.
Yeah.
It takes so much work to build yourself to the point where you can, you know, trust someone. But then
mm-hmm.
you have to communicate and tell them what's wrong. If something's, if you're upset about something, you can't be afraid or feel like you have to hold it in, because then they're not going to want you anymore. So I think that's
right,
an
right.
issue that our women have really a lot of trouble with.
You have to take that risk. I always say, I mean, it's not, you know, it's a, when you're doing that, you know, when you're healing and trying to build yourself up for a new relationship, if you're doing work on self-esteem and being more comfortable with yourself and your feelings and your body and all that stuff, you know, little by little, you're going to feel more comfortable speaking about who you are,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're in group situations or support, like your blogs and healing weekends and stuff like that. You get more used to just kind of, well, this is who I am. And people say, oh, okay, you know, if people don't judge you, people accept you, and it's safe to speak. And if you have
mm-hmm.
those kinds of experiences, you'll feel safer speaking in a relationship, but it's still going to be hard. But I always say to women, if And then if even if you just do it to just speak yourself, speak your truth, validate yourself by just speaking what's there. If the other person doesn't like it, at least you can feel good that you haven't repressed yourself. You can just, you know, you can feel good about this is who I am. This is what I feel.
Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to assert yourself and express yourself. You know, I teach women to be assertive, which a lot of women don't understand. That doesn't mean aggressive.
Right.
But being assertive means that you can say something that you want, say
mm-hmm.
something that may be bothering you and why it's hurting you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, rather than overreacting. And it takes a lot of practice, I mean, especially when you don't have high self-esteem, because
yeah.
I think you're always feeling that you're not worthy or deserving of something.
Yeah, yeah, it's scary.
I know that I've worked on the issues of self-esteem my whole entire life for me, but one of the most amazing things I tell my women all the time that I find is that, you know, I always felt if I looked back, you know, if I looked thin, you know, weight has always been my crushing overblow in life.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if I were thinner, then, you know, I'd have better self-esteem. But I always tell them, I have women who are the most beautiful, physically beautiful women in the world, who are models and actresses that come to me for help. And I would think to myself, well, why would they possibly have low self-esteem? And yet many of them have lower self-esteem than I ever had.
Right.
It's not really based on how you look on the outside. It's how you feel about yourself on the inside, right?
It really is. It really is, absolutely. When I had left the narcissist for good, a year and a half ago, because of the cheating and this and that, because I didn't feel good in the relationship, I never felt good about how I looked. You know, I was always, like, looking in the mirror, always made sure I had makeup on, always afraid I wasn't going to look good enough, you know, which is a terrible way to live. I remember when I left, and I was just kind of hanging around in my own place, I had no makeup, I looked a mess, and I looked in the mirror, and I loved the way I looked.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You were looking like that for you,
like
not
me.
For somebody else,
like me
right?
Now. Yeah, this is me, right? Not
mm-hmm.
myself back. Yeah, it has so little to do with looks.
And
well,
that's
yeah, you
thing.
Would think a beautiful woman would be on top of the world, but that's not always the case.
No, it's not always the case. And once again, I think it's how you feel inside.
It
women
is.
That I met with in Houston, they were beautiful women. I thought, oh, my God, look how beautiful they are.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't make any difference as far as, you know, where they are now because they went through the same problem.
No, it's completely subjective. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that's why I find self-esteem is just so, you know, interesting as far as, you know, how to develop it, how to have a strong self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it comes from early family messages. Do you feel that way?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. We're all kind of stuck with, you know, our brain is literally wired when we're young.
Mm-hmm.
So that for the rest of our lives, no matter how much healing we get, no matter how much work we do, we initially can react from those places. Like, I don't know about you, but growing up I had a lot of inadequacy, feelings
mm-hmm.
of inadequacy, shame, okay? If something happens to me that, you know, I get a message or somebody thinks I didn't do something well, that's the first thing that comes up. But what you can do is learn to recognize that, I call it the little girl, when the little girl shows up,
mm-hmm.
you come to recognize what that is. And just knowing that that's a reaction from childhood, it gives you power. You know what I mean? It gives you some detachment from it. It makes
mm-hmm.
you, it's like, it's called dual awareness. And it loses its power just when you recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an example of something you do in trauma work with the inner child.
I think what's really interesting.
We react from that forever, but we can learn to move on from the reaction and create different experiences whenever something like that happens. And that's what essentially trauma work is. It's learning how to tolerate reactions, either a flashback from, you know, a recent trauma or the things that come up from childhood, doing the work with the inner child, and that there's a lot that's involved with that. Some of it is creating, using imagery to create alternate endings, to create a better parent, an internal parent. Also to learn how to nurture the inner child, learn how to soothe, self-soothe.
Uh-huh.
And all of these things are healing, and they build self-esteem. It's really important work, the inner child work. It can also be done through hypnosis very effectively.
Hmm. Yeah, I read that in your work, and I wasn't really that familiar. I don't know if our women have really tried that, but that certainly is an alternative.
Yeah, and also hypnosis and other things that kind of just put you deep inside yourself in a, you know, bring you to your center, to your core, even the body work, all of those things build self-esteem. Because whenever you can be in your body, whenever you can be still inside of yourself and feel relaxed and at peace, you're creating that new wiring in your brain. You're creating a better sense of self, a safer, more relaxed, calm, feeling, and that just builds the self. It's hard to explain, but it works.
Yeah, you did mention in one of your articles that forgiving, okay, it says, what in your experience is the biggest issue or problem that people who have been betrayed by a sociopath need to overcome? And you wrote, forgiving themselves for losing themselves through another's control and being in the situation. When love turns out to be a fraud, it throws everything into question. Identity, judgment, trust, and safety. People blame themselves and feel humiliated. It takes time to rebuild the self.
Yes. That's what I hear the most. That seems to be the hardest thing for people to let go. Blaming themselves for being there. You know, why was I there so long? Why, you know, why didn't I see the signs? Why was I so naive? Why didn't I protect my children? All of that stuff, yeah. And then, but the blame is, was already going on in the relationship, right? It's going on during the relationship, taking too much responsibility for everything, taking on the blame. And then after the relationship is over, there's still that blaming that we do to ourselves.
That we could have done something differently. It would have changed things.
Yeah.
And then you said, is there one tip you can suggest, when the question was asked, for readers to recover from this kind of betrayal? And you wrote, it's not your fault. The love you offer deserves love back. So surround yourself now with loving, supportive friends and support. And I think that's so important, just like you started off by saying, support makes the whole difference, right?
It's the most important thing. With good support, you can get through anything. You can heal from anything.
And sometimes it hurts. You know, a lot of times women say, oh, I'm not up to it. You know, it's going to take me time. And I said, it's not a contest, but, you know, you can't keep running away from it, because if you run away from it, it comes right back at you. It's not like it's going to disappear.
Yeah.
They just don't get better on their own. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. Yes.
So
I mean, there might be
a
time at the beginning you feel like just kind of licking your wounds, but you can't stay there, you know?
Talk about the groups you're doing now. Now you're running groups, right?
We had our first group this weekend.
Oh, I'm so excited. And that's
in
Northern Jersey, right?
Yes.
Are you far from New York? And women from New York get to you?
Well, let's see. I guess we're about 45 minutes from New York, depending on what part of New York. Yep.
And also any women who are in Central or Northern Jersey.
Yeah,
you know, they're not too far from you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, I'm running the group. It's more like Central Jersey. That's where my office is.
And what's the best way to get in touch with you if people would like to join your group?
Well, you can email me. Are you putting the email available?
Yes, I'm going to be putting your email in there as far as my resource. But if you're interested, actually, for now, you can just email me at bondk@aol.com. And I'll be more than happy to pass on Marianne's contact information to you. How's that? Until we get you up on the website later this week.
Great. Thank you.
And then you can just go to the website and get her information there. But in the meantime, if there's any kind of emergency between now and then, just write to me at bondk@aol.com. A lot of people won't be hearing this show until tomorrow and throughout the week, Marianne. So And in the future, people always go back and listen to the archives because they can't make it at the live show.
Uh-huh.
But that's why you'll probably get inquiries on a ongoing basis rather than hitting you all at once. But I really do appreciate you being with us tonight because I think it's important for women to hear this, that they can heal, that, you know, they're not responsible for the bad behavior of the men who they married. You know, you marry in good faith and you're hoping everything will go fine. You don't realize what you're marrying at the time. Would you say that's true?
Oh, yes. Yeah. The only important thing, I mean, you didn't realize it was happening. The person was deceiving you. You were lured, you were subtly controlled over time. But at some point, you realize you're in such a painful situation, you've been so victimized that you want to get out. That's when you have to start grabbing onto support. You know, have faith that, you know, reach out and eventually you're going to get where you need to go. You start working on yourself and you'll get there.
I tell women you need to have a roadmap or a plan or a game map, and, you know, it can change and alter, but you have to have a plan. And I tell women also, every day you lose is a day that you'll never get back.
That's true.
And if you add up all those days, you're looking at months, weeks and months and years, and that's time that will never come back to you. You know, you have to take your life back.
That's true.
And I think the most important thing is for the children, wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely. For the woman to get up and get out of that situation,
Before you go,
do one thing, you know, make one phone call.
What do you tell women who come to you, because I have this argument all the time, and, you know, I'm putting my foot down on this one, you know, that they're staying because for the sake of their children.
Well, if you're in a destructive relationship, especially an abusive relationship, or a relationship with a gay man, it's a fraud, and it's not going to go anywhere. You're hurting the children. You're giving them a bad example of it's okay to be abused, it's okay to be false, it's okay to not have integrity in what you feel is right. And the children are going to get damaged anyway if the relationship is chaotic, abusive, there's a lot of yelling and screaming. The kids are all being affected by that every day.
So even though you think you're really helping your kids, you're really hurting them.
That's
right. I tell women sometimes you're afraid to make a move, and so you're using the children as your excuse.
Yes, that's true.
But you need to really take a look at the big picture, and if you're not doing them any favor. And I'll tell you one last thing that I tell our women, Marianne, and this always seems to be a really good tiebreaker for me. When women come to me and they tell me about their husbands and what should they do, and here's what I tell them very clearly, because this seems to really, you know, make the impact. I ask them if they have a daughter, and chances are they do, or if they don't, I ask them if they have a sister or even a best friend. And I say, if your daughter came to you and she said to you, I want to marry a man just like Daddy, what would you tell her to do? And I've never heard anybody come back to me ever say, I would tell her do it. They all say, I would tell her never to do it. And I say, well, if it's not good enough for your daughter, why is it good enough for you? If you don't want her to settle, why are you settling?
If you have them put themselves in somebody else's situation, you know, if your friend was doing that, your daughter, whatever, that they can be objective. But being in the situation, you're so emotionally, you know, clouded that it's hard to make a move. It's hard to, you know, like you said, there's fear and this and that. But you have to.
Right. You have to save your sanity and save your children's sanity. I always tell women you can downsize and live smaller, but you can never increase your peace of mind.
That's true. And over time, in a destructive relationship, you're going to be destroyed. Psychologically and physically. It takes a huge physical toll.
Absolutely. Yep. So I want to thank you so much for being our guest tonight and being part of our new support network for Women for Healing. And
thank you so much for having me.
I'd love to have you back again, if that's not too much to ask, in a couple months.
Oh, no. I would love to. Thank you.
That'll be great. So thank you so much for joining our show tonight. And we'll be talking to you soon again. And that's
okay,
Mary Ann Glynn.
Okay, I look forward to it.
Thank you so much, Mary Ann, and I'll be talking to you again soon. All right, bye-bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Good night.
Good night.
That was a wonderful guest that we had. I really appreciate the fact that Mary Ann was able to join us tonight, and hopefully her words will inspire you. And also, if you live in the North Jersey area or Central Jersey area and you're interested in going for the group sessions, for women who are recovering from post-traumatic stress after coming out of a bad marriage. Now, it's true not all of these marriages were from straight gay men, but some of them were. Some of our women are already, you know, joining Mary's group, so you'll have other people there who can give you live support, and that's what the whole issue is, finding live support. So now, before I go, I'm really going to try this song. My wonderful friend Debbie from Florida, from the support network there, she downloaded a song for me, and I'm going to see if this works. And you can listen to it, because this is a really important message for our women. And it's one of my favorite Beatles songs. I'm going to see if this works. Okay, here we go.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the line of a dark black night. Black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
Well, that was just a beautiful, inspiring song written by Paul McCartney from the Beatles. And I was telling Debbie that I checked out the meaning of this song. There was a secondary meaning other than, of course, blackbirds. And this song came along in the 1960s, where in England, where they used to call girls chicks here, they used to call them birds in London. That was the same, you know, nickname that they had for chicks here for girls. And when Paul McCartney wrote this song, he wrote it for blackbirds, referring to black women who were living in England during a civil rights movement there, as it was really prominent here as well. And you could hear by the words, take these broken wings and fly, or take these sunken eyes and see. But I think that today it has meaning to all of us who are broken women, to take our broken wings and fly. I think the message is powerful, that, you know, as women who have been through bad traumas and post-traumatic stress, that we can get up and we can move ahead, we can put our past behind us. It's never going to be totally behind us, but we can put it behind us enough that we can move on and find a new level of happiness. So that's my important message for tonight. And I want to thank all of you for listening. And we'll be back again here next week on the Straight Wives Talk Show. If you need support other than listening to this show, don't forget to write to me. If you're not getting my newsletter, I have my free monthly newsletter. This month is going to be a very important topic also. I'm going to be talking about the men who are, my new word, confused. When women come to me and tell me their husbands are confused, I'm going to explain to you what confused means. And so if you're interested in getting my newsletter and you're not on my regular monthly list, write to bondk@aol.com. Also, I'm very excited. I'm going to be starting online support chat for our women in England and Europe. That's going to be starting in April, at the end of the month of April. That will be Mondays at 9 o'clock UK time. So if you're listening to this show and you'd like to be part of my online support chat for the UK, please let me know. And whatever other help I can give you, once again, our children's group, our adult children's support group, online support, chat rooms, newsletters, get-togethers, just write to me at bondk@aol.com. You never have to do this alone. There will always be support available for you, and I will find it for you. So have a wonderful night, and I'll be talking to you again next week. Love to all of you, and get healthy. Bye-bye.